Hi guys, this is Chelsea. One of the reasons I created Deliberations was to explore flaws in the jury system and the criminal justice system. Particularly with regards to this season, I'm becoming more aware that I not only want to reveal problems, but I want to explore possible solutions. Something I've been wondering about are the opportunities presented to victims of sexual assault and harassment in civil court. So today we're speaking with a fantastic lawyer about whether that's possible and whether or not it's easier than seeking justice in criminal court. Hi everyone, we're speaking to Kelvin Fisher of the law firm Wallace Saunders in Overland Park, Kansas. Hi Kelvin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I appreciate you getting on the call with me today.
Oh, no problem.
The first thing I wanted to ask you is whether or not you're aware of any people choosing to sue in civil court for a criminal offense.
Yes, that happens quite a bit, and sometimes even in conjunction with, you know, a pending criminal case. I defended somebody in a civil matter while there was a corollary criminal action that was pending. It was an assault and battery case, and so there was in that situation there was a pending criminal action and a pending civil action that was going on. So and some of the reasons why people choose to go forward and sue somebody in civil court for criminal offenses, you know, I think one of the main reasons is, you know, that they may have sustained a significant amount of damages, whether that be medical damages or in the context of sexual assault, as in the case on the podcast this season, mental, emotional damages, or even as a punitive measure, because a lot in civil cases, if there are aggravating or mitigating aggravating circumstances, punitive damages can be assessed.
I see. Okay, that makes sense to me that someone would need those like funds to handle any medical or psychological care they need following a criminal offense. So in your experience, you're saying that you've seen that to happen simultaneously, like a civil case and a criminal case would go forward. Can you talk to me a little bit about how the burden of proof is different in civil court as opposed to criminal court?
Burden of proof is much higher in criminal court as opposed to civil court. In criminal court, the burden of proof, as you know, is beyond a reasonable doubt. Essentially, it's people describe that in different ways. The way I describe it is essentially, there can't be doubt that would affect a reasonable person's belief that somebody was guilty. The burden of proof is much lower in a civil trial. Different jurisdictions have different ways of describing it, but probably the easiest way to describe it is more likely than not. So the plaintiff in a civil case generally has to prove their claim, you prove the elements of their claim on a more likely than not standard. And the easiest way to explain it is in terms of percentages. You have to bear with my percentages on the criminal. I don't do the criminal, so my percentages might be off. But if I were to, in a criminal matter with, you know, reasonable doubt, I would say basically the jury would have to be 98%, certain that the defendant was guilty. Whereas in a civil case, the plaintiff would have to basically, with that more likely than not, have to prove their case with a 51% burden. So there's a much, much lower threshold in a civil matter as opposed to a criminal matter.
Right. That makes sense to me. I'd like to ask you about reporting such as the following from the New York Times, and I'm quoting from a Times article. In 1997, Mr. Weinstein reached a previously undisclosed settlement with Rose McGowan, then a 23-year-old actress, after an episode in a hotel room during the Sundance Film Festival. The $100,000 settlement was not to be construed as an admission by Mr. Weinstein, but intended to avoid litigation and buy peace, according to the legal document. So I've heard accounts like these pertaining to sexual harassment and sexual assault that speak to settlements. And I've been wondering whether language like this means that there was a civil suit filed.
Not necessarily. It can mean that a civil suit was filed and settled out of court. But it can also mean that the matter was resolved pre-suit by the parties, and that the parties agreed to confidentiality and with regard to the terms of the settlement and monetary amounts. Of course, with those type of settlements, a lot of times some of the terms, you know, slip out and get leaked to the media. But in these cases, it doesn't always mean that there was a lawsuit filed. So a lot of times, particularly these high profile cases, the potential defendants don't want their name to be out there in the public as, you know, being associated with allegations such as sexual harassment. So they may be quick to try to reach a settlement, a confidential settlement. That way the general public is not aware of what may be going on.
At what point would the general public be made aware? Would that happen if a suit is filed, or are those in civil court, are those documents private, automatic? I know in criminal court, everything is public record, even though it might be hard tracking down, you know, transcripts and documents. Yeah. You need to file requests. But can you talk about how public or private things are in the civil sphere?
Well, if no suit was filed, then and there's a confidentiality agreement, the public should probably never ever find out about it, you know, unless there's a leak, and you know, any such leak is probably going to be in violation of the confidentiality agreement. If there's a lawsuit that's filed, everything associated with the lawsuit is generally public knowledge. Now, there's some things which may be, shielded from the public, you know, and situations, you know, where there might be a minor involved in a case. Information regarding that minor might be shielded, you know, from the public. And a lot of times what you might see in those cases is rather than having the minor's name mentioned in the lawsuit, you'll see initials, things of that nature. But, you know, for the most part, civil lawsuits, as with, you know, criminal lawsuits, they are public records, although, portions of the lawsuit, they can be sealed, you know, at the request of the parties, or if the judge, you know, thinks that there's, a significant reason for doing so.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to give you a hypothetical. Let's say that I am sexually assaulted and I try to take it to criminal court and I press those charges and he's found not guilty. So then I decide, well, maybe I should go after him civilly. Is there any reason why the acquittal in criminal court would reflect badly on my chances in civil court?
No, because there are different burdens of proof, and I think, you know, one good example that, you know, a lot of people are probably aware of, the O.J. Simpson, he was acquitted in criminal court, and then got a much different result when he was sued civilly, and you know, same fact pattern, but you know, much different result, and you know, part of that. Part of that could have been a different jury, but, you know, there was also a much lower standard of proof. And, same thing in the context of sexual assault, the burden of proof is much lower. So while somebody might get acquitted in criminal court, that doesn't necessarily mean that they wouldn't, stand a chance at some type of recovery in the context of a civil case.
Right. That makes sense. That actually just gave me a new question, though. I'm thinking about, you know, you've been mentioning the juries on civil trials. How are those juries selected?
It's the same jury selection process as for criminal trials. In our area, the potential jurors are drawn from driver's licenses, the voter registration polls, and essentially what happens is they call in usually 100 to 150 people. They go to the jury assembly room at the courthouse, sit around, drink bad coffee until a judge comes and swears them in, and then the judge comes and gets them, takes them down to the courtroom, and then the attorneys generally start the jury questioning process, which usually closer to about, I know my experience has been it's usually closer to about 11 o'clock, but the jurors are, at least my experience, they're supposed to report about 8:30 or 9 o'clock, so usually there's a couple hours in there, but it's the same process. So the same jury, the same 150 jurors that might get pulled in, they can be called to a courtroom for a civil case, a criminal case. There's no distinction as to what type of case they might be called for.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that. So you're saying sitting on civil juries is also a civic duty, and that they pull those people the same way. For some reason, I guess you just see that less often, people being called to jury duty for civil trials than criminal. At least that would be my guess.
Yeah, and I part of that reason is that the vast majority of civil cases settle, it's somewhere between 95-97% of civil cases settle. So that's probably why there are far less civil trials now than there used to be. So that's why there aren't as many civil jury trials. But in the event that there is one, the jury selection process is the same as the criminal jury selection process. At least it is in this area, where I practice. But I suspect that it's similar in most jurisdictions.
I see. Okay, well, you mentioned settlements, so let's talk about settlements for a second. I'm just wondering, let's say that things are settled. I would imagine that most often the defendants would want to include an NDA or a confidentiality agreement to protect their name. And I'm wondering if that is not included, is that public record? Would people, like, let's say a woman files a sexual assault charge in civil court, and they wind up settling, and there's not a confidentiality agreement reached as part of that settlement. So she would be able to I inform other people about his offense. Is that correct?
Yes. And if the lawsuit was filed, the pleadings, that's public record. So anybody could go to the courthouse and look at the pleadings that were filed and see what the allegations were. So, with regard to the settlement, the terms of that settlement, if there was no confidentiality or NDA clause in there, she would be able to tell people how much she received in the settlement, and not be subject to civil liability for doing so.
I see. So possibly in a case of like a Weinstein, that would be motive for him to settle things before any charges are officially filed. Because I imagine like his name and his reputation was pretty important for him to protect. And so that's why he was eager to settle before things were made official.
Right. Yeah. And there'd be a huge incentive to try to get something like sexual assault allegations resolved prior to a suit being filed. It would be incentive to try to keep your name out of any public filings. That because once that pleading gets filed, that lawsuit gets filed, it's fair game, and right. Media has access to it, general public has access to it.
Right. And as a civil attorney, do you think that NDAs and confidentiality agreements are most typically part of any settlement reached before or after any charges are filed?
I would say in this type of, in the context of sexual assault cases, I would say probably so. Okay. Just due to the very nature of, of the allegations.
Right. All right. So I'm just thinking, I guess putting myself in the position of a woman who wanted to file charges, if I needed monetary support for any kind of medical or psychiatric care, then that would be my priority above having things on public record. If I just wanted, the truth to be filed and accessible to the general public, then I would insist on officially pressing those charges.
Right. Yeah. And that certainly would be your right to go ahead and file the lawsuit and make that information available to the public. There would be nothing preventing you from doing that. And, that would definitely be your right to do so.
Right, which actually is kind of an interesting point, because that would mean, like, if let's say I'm assaulted and I take him to criminal court and he's acquitted, if I were to go around telling people that he is a sexual predator, then I would, I imagine, be liable for, like, a slander, I would be found to be at fault for slandering his good name if he was acquitted in criminal court. But if I wanted to file that charge civilly, that's within my rights, accusing him in a civil case.
Right. Yeah. And you would be subject to a possible claim of slander if you did go around saying, he's a sexual offender. If for whatever reason a jury somewhere down the line determined that was an untrue statement.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I can see how that can be frustrating if your hands are tied and you've been the victim of a genuine assault, and suddenly you're not really able to go around stating so without putting yourself at risk for a slander suit. But filing civil charges is one way to do it. Part of what I wanted to ask you is whether or not you were aware of any stigma that plaintiffs face for going after someone's money. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had a defendant that suffered from that kind of stigma, but I think that someone looking at, for example, the Rose McGowan, Harvey Weinstein thing, back then, before he's, like, widely known and believed to be a sexual predator, they might have just accused her of just going after his money or just wanting his money.
Yeah, I think in most civil suits, I think that there's kind of, especially over the last few years, like with tort reform and things of that nature, I think in general there is a stigma on plaintiffs in civil cases, that the plaintiffs are money grubbers and whatnot. I do mostly defense work on the civil side, and I can tell you that I do not share that view. Of course, there are exceptions to that, but unfortunately, there are in the context of sexual assault, there are people who have that same view, and the problem with the stigma that's associated with that is you may have people who have gone through sexual assault who may not be inclined to talk, come out and talk to anybody about it or say anything about it because they're afraid of how they might be perceived by others, or things of that nature, which is unfortunate, because there really shouldn't be a stigma associated for somebody who's gone through that.
Absolutely, I agree. And really, the more I think about it, in the hypothetical I presented, where a woman lost at criminal trial and then chooses to, press charges civilly, I mean, that must take an unparalleled amount of energy and strength of will, because it sounds like it's really, really difficult to be a sexual assault victim in criminal court and to go through that and suffer that loss of an acquittal and then choose to try it all over again in the civil sphere. I mean, that would take quite a lot of energy and strength.
One example comes to mind, the Kobe Bryant, Colorado, sexual assault case. There was the criminal case, that went forward, and ultimately the prosecutor chose not to go forward with that. And then there was a civil matter that was resolved, out of court on that. And I do recall, after that civil matter was resolved, various outlets and reading things on the internet, people calling the I don't think her name was ever divulged, but the victim in that case, an opportunist, a money grubber, and all things of that nature. So that's one situation where I do recall a specific situation where that stigma, was attached to somebody who sought civil recourse regarding a sexual assault situation.
Yeah, that's a good example. It seems like the more beloved the public figure, the harder everything gets. People don't want to believe that's true. And so they'd rather see an anonymous person as an opportunist than someone that they have, positive feelings for as a sexual predator.
Right.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, it is good to know that those options exist and that, a woman or a man or, anyone who's suffered from a sexual assault or sexual harassment has the opportunity, and they would be within their rights to file charges in civil court.
Yes.
That's good. So thank you for doing what you do.
No problem.
If people want to learn more about you or your law firm, how can they do that?
Yes, I am a civil litigator at Wallace Saunders. It's located in Overland Park, Kansas, which is in the Kansas City metro area. Website is wallacesaunders.com, and you can look at my profile on there. My name's Kelvin Fisher, and if you had any legal questions, problems, issues, I'd be more than happy to discuss with you.
That is awesome. You do really important work, and thank you for taking the time to speak to and educate us all about some of the nuances of that work.
Glad to do it.
If anyone has any thoughts on the topic of sexual assault civil cases, feel free to share on Facebook or email me at deliberationspod@gmail.com. This Wednesday, we're digging in deeper to the topic of statement analysis in the trial of Keith Montgomery, what it is and how it's used, line by line. Can this lie-detecting social science one day be part of a solution for he said, she said cases? We'll see you in 2 days.